You're listening to Get Abstract, the world's biggest collection of summaries.
This is a summary of We the Data, a book by Wendy H. Wong. Human life is being increasingly distilled into data points. Yet few people know who is collecting their data and how they're using it. Professor Wendy H. Wong offers critical insights into how datafication is transforming humanity and the social fabric, thus redefining the very nature of community. The socio-political choices that people make regarding datafication could influence how big data, AI, and other technologies affect life on an individual and collective level, explains Wong in this compelling read. Learn how to become a data citizen by using your voice to protect your interests and humanity's common future. Let's hear the first takeaway. Individuals must shift from being data subjects to becoming data stakeholders. People generate approximately 1 million terabytes of data every day, according to research from IBM. Smart devices, including phones, thermostats, refrigerators, and TVs, collect information about your preferences, health, location, and more. The big tech companies control much of the world's data, acting as data collectors while treating the public as passive data subjects. Individuals must empower themselves to take ownership of their role as co-creators of data, asserting their rights as data stakeholders or data citizens. How people respond to the datafication of daily life, that is, the gathering and use of human-generated information, will shape humanity's collective future. It's time to hold the companies collecting your data accountable. As a data citizen, you should have the right to prevent firms from using your data in ways that don't align with your best interests. It's a mistake to view data-fueled technologies such as AI as neutral, or to trust that businesses are using your data for good. People with profit-driven interests steer the creation of these technologies, and there's no guarantee that their innovations will serve the public well. If at present you don't feel empowered to claim your role as a data citizen, you're not alone. Becoming a data stakeholder requires a perspective shift, collective action, and global organization. Okay, here's the second takeaway. A human rights approach to data can hold data collectors accountable. Your data is sticky, like gum on the sole of your shoe. It's tough to scrub from the internet. Data is sticky for four reasons. First, data collectors and the human data sources who lack control over how their information spreads both contribute to data creation. Second, data captures the mundane, seemingly irrelevant activities of everyday life, such as when you leave for work every day or how many days you order takeout from the same restaurant. Third, data is constantly sold, shared, and merged with other data. And the fourth reason is data exists forever, because there's no way to track or control all the ways and places it travels. Data's stickiness has a human toll. It can undercut dignity, autonomy, and equity, which are foundational human rights. Society must find ways to bring these values to bear on data collection practices. The human rights issues that datafication raises are emerging and complex. What are the ethics of enabling algorithms to evaluate refugee status eligibility? Who should manage the data of people who die in wars? Lawyers Yuval Shani and Daphna Dror Shpilansky argue that there's a need to define and respect the rights of online persons. It's nearly impossible to ensure that your sensitive data, including deleted tweets and trashed emails, doesn't end up somewhere you didn't intend or anticipate. At RightsCon, an annual global human rights summit, multi-stakeholder efforts are already underway to apply a human rights framework to the tech industry. However, challenges lie ahead. Public entities such as states often struggle to regulate corporate-created digital platforms like TikTok because users usually agree to sweeping data collection and use practices when they sign up for the service. Sometimes nations are complicit in using private platforms to surveil citizens illegally, further highlighting the need for a shift toward data stakeholdership. Time for takeaway number three. Establishing individual data rights presents a complex challenge. Some argue in favor of establishing data rights akin to those that protect personal property. But the co-creation of data makes this exceedingly difficult to accomplish. While your data is an asset, it is different from property in that both you and the people who collect your data have some claim to ownership. Data co-creation is beyond your individual control, as it occurs in conjunction with data collectors' activities and socially through your relationships with other people. As writer Shoshana Zuboff explains, data collectors treat human experience as free raw material for translation into behavioral data. The companies collecting your data filter, aggregate, and compress it, generating decontextualized predictions. As a person, you have considerably less power in this dynamic, as your data becomes individually insignificant when amassed in enormous datasets. This is troubling, given that data is like DNA. It's a unique marker of different facets of your identity. Those who have control of your data essentially control parts of your selfhood. The fact that your data can exist forever also undercuts your ability to exercise rights similar to property rights. If you can't verify whether your data exists or has been deleted, how can you secure an ownership claim? Moreover, not all data provides the same value or poses the same risks. Some of your data, for example, reveals metadata, such as when you sent an email, while other data focuses on content, like the words in your email. Additionally, some forms of data, such as health data, are more sensitive than others. This data more dramatically affects humanity because it can affect employment and medical decision-making. Asserting your rights as a data citizen may consist of establishing guidelines about what categories of data shouldn't be processed. All right, here's the fourth takeaway. Buying and selling financial data may harm human dignity and autonomy. Facial recognition technology, FRT, enables collectors to create data from your face and use it in ways you can't control. Given that your face is central to establishing your identity, it's worth questioning whether buying and selling your facial data encroaches on your personhood. Should facial data be marked inalienable, like kidneys, or more akin to your photos, which you can sell? Does treating facial data like property that can be bought and sold threaten your human dignity and autonomy? One thing is certain. Companies will use and reuse your facial data indefinitely until people take action, demanding human rights-based protections for their facial data. Some countries like Canada treat biometric data, including facial data, as private, and thus subject to laws such as the Personal Information Protection and Electronic Documents Act, PIPEDA, and the Privacy Act. The idea of using consent to control how facial data is gathered is questionable, however. Proper consent requires comprehensive knowledge of how someone plans to amass, share, and otherwise use your data and the possible harm you could suffer due to these practices, an all but impossible set of circumstances. One of the most significant risks of using FRT is that it's frequently inaccurate. In fact, there are cases of FRT incorrectly identifying individuals as criminals when police try to use it as a law enforcement tool. Bias is another problem. Algorithms may fail to read darker faces accurately. Given the potential for accidental or deliberate misuse, it's clear that people must establish ethical guidelines for the technology. Otherwise, FRT might contribute to social harms like discrimination and enable surveillance states. Let's move on to the fifth takeaway. Your data doesn't die when you do. When you die, what will happen to your data, such as your photos, messages, and emails? Data does not die as humans do. Indeed, a range of products and apps are emerging that are specifically designed to allow a digital version of yourself to live on after death, thus radically transforming the nature of human community. Microsoft now has a patent to create bots, powered by social data, with personalities based on living and deceased individuals. In the future, it might be possible to learn more about a family member through their bot after their death than you could during their lifetime, as the bot could reveal secrets the individual chose not to share while alive. Just as a human rights framework establishes standards for living with dignity, The dignified treatment of posthumous data also requires standards. The potential to create bots of specific individuals raises a host of ethical dilemmas related to autonomy, privacy, and consent. Even if someone agrees to the creation of such a bot, it's not at all certain that the bot could reasonably exercise the nuance, discretion, and judgment required to reflect the wishes of the deceased accurately. It's essential to establish norms surrounding digital selves, how they're created and by whom. People must consider whether protections are needed to prevent digital immortals from ill-treatment and degradation, and how to prepare for hacks and malfunctions. All right, here's another takeaway. Big tech companies need checks and balances. Big tech companies like Google, Amazon, Meta, Apple, and Microsoft, GMAM, offer services that people now largely view as indispensable. These companies can guide user behaviors and control access to the information that appears on users' platforms. GMAM provide services to the public, but unlike public institutions or governments, they do not look after people's interests. Their goal is to further their private interests. It's time to start holding the corporations that are expanding and benefiting from datafication accountable to the ethos and full spectrum of human rights. Harvard Law professor Noah Feldman once proposed creating a Supreme Court called the Oversight Board, OB, that would oversee Facebook. In 2019, Facebook announced the creation of its own OB. Today, Meta's OB members vote impartially on whether to remove or reinstate content. They base their decisions on human rights norms around freedom of expression and Facebook's community standards. If GMAM, today's global tech governors, want to continue to hold on to power, data stakeholders must demand that more companies develop similar systems of checks and balances. Let's now hear the seventh takeaway. To ensure meaningful data stakeholdership, society must establish data literacy as a human right. The public must have access to the resources and opportunities required to become data literate. Data literacy gives people the knowledge to make informed decisions in today's data-centric world. The United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, defines literacy as a human right because the ability to read is essential for anyone hoping to participate fully in their community and wider society. Data literacy, the capacity to understand, work with, analyze, and argue with data, should also be a human right. Making data literacy a human right would help people become data stakeholders. Libraries can play a crucial role in helping the public develop data literacy. Many libraries are already expanding their resources, offering technical training, and providing access to new technologies like 3D printers. It's not a stretch to imagine that libraries, an invaluable resource for developing linguistic literacy, could offer data literacy resources to the public. Becoming data literate would help ensure that individuals properly consent to sharing their data, as they'll more fully understand the implications of doing so. Time for the eighth and final takeaway. Standards won't emerge without collective action. Moving toward a human rights approach to datafication isn't the only shift needed to protect the collective good. Society must establish frameworks to settle questions connected with data-driven tech developments, such as what constitutes personhood in virtual contexts. For example, should governments grant rights to lifelike digital entities? The brunt of the responsibility for protecting your rights as a data citizen falls on you. If people don't take collective action, it's unlikely the corporations will change their practices. The public must organize, calling for global standards for all data collectors. Failing to work toward change may worsen inequality and result in a loss of autonomy and human dignity. New solutions such as data trusts that act as intermediaries to serve the interests of trustees must emerge. Corporations and governments shouldn't be the sole stewards of your data. Remember, as a co-creator of data, you're entitled to have a voice in whether and how your data comes to life. That was a summary of We the Data, a book by Wendy H. Wong. Here's a reminder of the eight takeaways. Takeaway 1. Individuals must shift from being data subjects to becoming data stakeholders. The second takeaway. A human rights approach to data can hold data collectors accountable. Takeaway 3. Establishing individual data rights presents a complex challenge. Takeaway 4. Buying and selling financial data may harm human dignity and autonomy. Takeaway number 5. Your data doesn't die when you do. Takeaway 6. Big tech companies need checks and balances. Takeaway 7. To ensure meaningful data stakeholdership, society must establish data literacy as a human right. And finally, takeaway 8. Standards won't emerge without collective action.
You've been listening to a summary by Get Abstract. For more summaries on this and related topics, visit our app and website.